if you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the Supreme Creator. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christ. This evening, our seminar topic is Celebrating the Light of Reality. What is light, and how did it come into this world? So if you're ready, take a deep breath and experience the light of your higher principles, that is to say, the monad, the I Am principle, and the soul, which is conscious awareness. See it flooding the mind. See it coming into the brain. See it balancing the right and left lobes of the brain. See it flowing down through the nervous system, throughout the chakras, and throughout every cell of your body. Just realize that every part of you is the living light of God. I would like to start this evening with Lesson 61 of the Course in Miracles. This is from the workbook. And the lesson is, I am the light of the world. Would you like to say that? I am the light of the world. Who is the light of the world except you, God's Son? This then is merely a statement of the truth about yourself. It is the opposite of a statement of pride, of arrogance, or of self-deception. It does not describe the self-concept you have made. It does not refer to any of the characteristics with which you have endowed your idols. It refers to you as you were created by God. It simply states the truth. To the ego, today's idea is the epitome of self-glorification. But the ego does not understand humility, mistaking it for self-debasement. Humility consists of accepting your role and in taking no other. It is not humility to insist that you cannot be the light of the world if that is the function God has assigned to you. It is only arrogance that would assert this function cannot be for you. And arrogance is always of the ego. True humility requires that you accept today's idea, because it is God's voice which tells you it is true. This is a beginning step in accepting your real function on earth. It is a giant stride toward taking your rightful place in the atonement. It is a positive assertion of your right to receive the atonement and an acknowledgement of the power that is given you to extend atonement to others. You will want to think about the idea that we are sharing as often as possible, for it is the perfect answer to all illusions and therefore to all temptations to buy into illusion. It brings all the images you have made about yourself to the truth and helps you to go forward in peace, unburdened and certain of your purpose. I am the light of the world. That is my only function. That is why I am here. Let's repeat that together. I am the light of the world. That is my only function. That is why I am here. So according to several scientifically based, and I would say vetted, scientific YouTubes, we are presently being bombarded by cosmic energies of unknown origin and unknown effect. Some speculate that it is the shift into the next dimension and the new fifth dimensional Earth. What we do know for a fact, aside from what is speculated just then, is that the light is increasing and all energy is divine and increases the light. So the divine vibration manifests as light. Wherever there is that divine vibration, there will be a manifestation of light. Your divine vibration manifests as light. What is light? Light is conscious awareness. Light is divine creative intelligence. Light is the cosmic Christos. Light is the only Son of God, or the only extension of God. Light is the collective soul. Light is immortal truth in every atom. Light is reality. So to raise your vibration, increase your conscious soul awareness, that is to say, light. Become aware of yourself as light, as soul. Identify yourself as the light of soul awareness. You've been identifying with the human body, your mind, your thoughts, your senses. But you have higher bodies of light. You have a divine mind that is one with the divine mind of God. And you have paranormal, supernatural senses that extend your ability to experience life at multidimensional levels that you can't tap into as long as you're identifying with matter, with that which is transitory, with that which is earth-born and earth-related. So you don't have a soul. You are a soul. And the soul is pure light. So ultimately, every single thing other than the light will dissolve back into the nothingness from which it only seemed to appear. All shadows are illusions that dissolve the instant you enter the light. That principle applies on all of the psychic and material realms beneath the realm of the kingdom of light, which we call the kingdom of the soul, or the fifth dimension. So God is light. And soul is God's radiance into creation through you and me. We are the conduits to which light enters the world. So today is the winter solstice. That since the beginning of man's tenure on this planet has been celebrated as the coming of light into the world, usually celebrated in some way which associated the light of the sun or the light of fire. Almost all ceremonies involved the sun and fire. So the temples, the pyramids, you know, all of the ancient structures were specifically aligned so that the interiors would be illumined exactly at the time of the solstice. And so it's no wonder that there was a great awe when exactly at the solstice the interior of the temple would be filled with light. Can you imagine when they had no electricity, they had no other light, only the sun and fire? That is, after Atlantis, we'll have to, you know, bring that into the post-Atlantean period. But you can imagine the wonder. So much, much later, the Romans combined the ancient celebrations of light and the historical records that came to be around the incarnation of Jesus of Nazareth, and they formed a new state religion under the Emperor Constantine, and that is known today as Christianity. It was not started by Jesus, and was a creation of man, basically with a political agenda at the time. At that time, or shortly thereafter, Pope Gregory, who brought forward the Gregorian calendar and replaced the lunar calendar, which was actually more accurate, designated the winter solstice, and specifically December 25th, as the official birth date of Jesus, and called that the advent of light into our world, with Jesus as the Son of God. Now, Jesus was not born at that time, but that was the winter solstice celebration, that time in which the winter solstice and the festivals of light were generally being played out. But he was probably born under the sign of Pisces and undoubtedly in the spring, because that would be the time that the shepherds would be out tending their sheep out in the, you know, dead winter. But each religion has its own variations of this coming of light into the world. And there's many, many that were designated as the light bringer or the Son of God that embodied some facet of the sun worship at that time. And in fact, you know, every holiday was originally a holy day with a celebration of light. I was thinking, you know, how strange we celebrate so-called holidays, or what would have been holy days. For example, many people feature as their Christmas meal a baked ham. A baked ham is known to have the lowest vibration of anything you could possibly eat. Now, why would they have that on a day where supposedly we're to raise our vibrations? Then, generally, holidays become horrible days because you're going about buying gifts for people you really don't want to spend money on, who really don't need whatever it is you're buying. So you're violating that time that could be spent attuning to a higher vibration by running yourself ragged, trying to fulfill holiday expectations, spending money that you very often don't have, and running into unnecessary debt, which adds again to the stress of the season. And then, on top of that, people generally drink alcoholic beverages. Well, if you pay attention, after you've had even one drink, you'll notice a weakness at the nape of your neck as that dulling effect begins to set into your nervous system. It dulls your brain, it dulls your awareness, it dulls your senses, and deadens and dulls the very receptacle, that is the nervous system and brain, through which you receive the divine light of your higher principles. Why would people do that? And then there's too much noise. It's all this moving about of the body and noise and carrying on. And when you do that, you disrupt the consciousness so it can't stay in that centered place because it's mindless and unconscious and simply is an agitation of the consciousness. In ancient times, meditation was specifically devoted to attuning to the energies that were being infused into humanity at that time. It truly is a very sacred time. But we blow off our ability to connect with a higher source at that time. And I used to flee Christmas. I would go to India generally, as far away as I could from the commercialism and the craziness of Christmas, only to find, when I was in the ashram of Sai Baba, Sai Baba fully celebrated Christmas. We would have Santa Claus, we would have his college boys dressed up as Santa, and the little children dressed up as elves. He would always have a Christmas tree for us. There would always be Christmas carols that we would carry lighted candles and walk into the ashram at the very, very moment that the dawn was breaking on Christmas Day. And Sai Baba would come out on the veranda of his balcony and bless us. He'd always wear a white silk robe, and he would stand there and bless us. And we'd all be dressed in white with white jasmine in our hair and carrying the white lighted candles. And so there was a great honoring of the true spirit of Christmas. And very often there would be a play that would be presented. Sometimes there would be an enactment of the birth of Jesus. At the same time, they would also have an enactment of little Sai Baba as he was born into the world also as a divine Christ child. And my favorite thing, and I was present from the very, very first time that they offered, was the Christmas choir. And we would spend days and days and days rehearsing music that we would then sing directly to Sai Baba. The very, very first choir, there were only 40 of us. And we were standing on the stage at Prashanti Nilayam, and Sai Baba was standing in front of us. I was in the front row. I was about 3 feet from Sai Baba. And we were singing the Handel chorus of the Messiah, King of Kings and Lord of Lords, Hallelujah, Hallelujah. And I'm looking into Sai Baba's eyes while I'm singing that. If you can imagine the thrill of that. I sang each Christmas that I was at the ashram. Gradually the choir grew until the last Christmas that I sang, which was 2006. There were so many of us that we filled the whole Purnachandra auditorium, which was the auditorium where these events were held. And there were so many of us. Actually, it was the Sai Kuwant Hall, which is actually a larger one than the original. And I would guesstimate there were probably 1,000 of us in that choir on the woman's side and probably an equal number on the men's side. And it was amazing to be able to sing directly to the divine incarnation and acknowledge him as that. Because you see, when other divine avatars, incarnations of God, were upon the earth, only a tiny handful of people at the time, maybe even one or two in some cases, actually realized that this was a divine incarnation. Most of them didn't know that. Jesus himself had very, very few around him. I think Peter was perhaps the only one that recognized him and said so. You are the Christ. You know, when he asked, who do you say I am? He said, you are the Christ, the Son of God. And so it's a rare thing to be a contemporary with a divine incarnation and then to have the ability due to to a level of light velocity that you have to recognize that incarnation. Because unless you have awakened light, you can't recognize the light in others. You just can't. The ego mind cannot conceptualize God. It thinks it's God. It can't conceptualize a divine incarnation. That's why very few people have the grace to recognize the Lord or even a saint when they appear in the world. And that's why the world usually does its best to bring them down in some way or to crucify them. So anyway, we have lost a sense of the sacred, very much so. Or we go to a church where somebody else does the prayers, somebody else does the ceremony, sometimes in a language we don't understand, and we get up and walk out and we've only been spectators, but we haven't experienced the thrilling presence of the divine that hasn't been quickened in us. And so it's become kind of like a show. Most churches are like, you know, like watching a show now. People perform, but you don't see very many entering actually into the experience that's there for them. I think it's largely because we haven't been trained, we haven't been accustomed, we haven't been taught that you need to call yourself forward into your experiences. You have to create a context and a participatory one in which you actually create for yourself an experience. You just don't sit there and wait for it to drop on you. It doesn't actually do that. You have to do some wooing, some courting, some evoking of that presence, which is why it's very powerful if you're in a really spirit-filled congregation where they're really calling out to God with all their heart. And very often the Holy Spirit will descend on such a congregation and miracles start to manifest. People start getting healed. People start having profound experiences of the presence of God within them, transforming them, shifting them. But I would have to say that's kind of rare. You know, that's certainly not found in the majority of worship establishments of any faith. Most people are doing Christianity 101, Hinduism 101, Islam 101, where it's all outer. It's all outer ritual and established traditional ceremonies that lack the fire of the living spirit. And God is an all-consuming fire. Not the kind of fire that burns and destroys, but that pure white, holy Shekinah fire that actually is the form of your highest vehicles. You yourself are a white flame in your highest principle. You know, in Atlantis, we had access to something called the Moxon flame. The Moxon fire, which not only provided all of our energy, free energy that we used, but also was where we descended when we were entering the world. We were flame-born. And also when it was time to depart the world or change form, we stepped into the Moxon flame. And, of course, that has been taken completely off the planet because there was a misuse by those who came on the planet and tried to usurp that power for selfish utilization. So we are deprived of that now. But I believe it's going to return in what's called the technology of light. It's been prophesied to return, but only after we have become purified and are living in the living light consciousness that is our true self. The shadows of the mind-generated realities that we assume to be what is and what prevails, are as shadows. They're as bad dreams, dark dreams, dismal dreams. And they bring a darkness and an oppression with them. Those must dissolve into the light as you call yourself forward as a divine incarnation. Get it and get it clearly. You are a divine incarnation through and through. And nothing else is true about you but that. Nothing else. So let's begin looking at this at an even deeper level, because what we're talking about includes every single one of us as a son of God. So light first entered creation with a divine sankalpa, that is to say, a divine resolve, which was to be, implying to be other than the eternal absolute it of itself. You could say, roughly, it could be translated as, I am, let me be many. And that first impetus resounded as the primordial word, the living word. And the light was the first emanation into creation of the formless absolute and manifested as consciousness or soul. The one light thus extended as the light of consciousness, called in Sanskrit Chaitanya. Within each one of us, it appears as individualized divinity, which is referred to as the Jivi or Jivatma in Sanskrit, or simply as soul. We are the embodiments of the divine resolve to be as many. From this resolve, this primordial word, all creation came into existence. Time, space, individualized mind, which is also a form of the jivi, or the individual, and all phenomenal manifestation. Kind of beautiful, you know, when you get a visual of that. The only begotten Son of God is the living Word and living love incarnate as you and me, individualized rays of the Creator's resolve to appear as the many. So collectively, we are the divine sonship, the collective light bringer, the collective light bearer, the collective Messiah, the cosmic Christos. So the one we recognize as the elder brother, the Christ, was also known as the first fruit of the Father. In other words, the Christ was the very first soul to individualize into full Christ-conscious Godhood on this planet. And thus he's known as the elder brother, who opened and revealed the way of conscious reunion with the Father. The Father can be termed as the Creator or as the monad, the I Am. Because actually, there's only one self, one Paramatma, which is called many things in each different spiritual tradition. So the parable of the prodigal son who left home and lost himself in the world for a time and a season is the story of every one of us, a soul. And as the parable goes, we will each come to our right mind, we'll arise, and return home to the Father, who will welcome us with open arms and a celebratory feast. Now, one of the sons stayed at home, and he was somewhat resentful that this other son, who had been away and had wasted his heritage, was receiving a big party. But the father said, "No, my son was lost, and now he is found." I believe that the somewhat resentful brother in this parable refers to those souls who remained in serving in the higher realms, but didn't come to earth or enter into the time-space causality paradigm. It's very, very difficult to take upon yourself the template of duality and the mind, which itself is dual, and try to remember the unified field of reality. The whole light being that we truly are gets splintered into this false self, true self, this shadow self, this lighted self, and it's very difficult to see clearly. And sometimes we spend many, many, many eons recycling because we don't know how to get out. We just don't know how to get out of this labyrinth. And thus we are the light of the world. And even though that's our own purpose and only purpose and function here on earth, we've gotten lost in the labyrinth of the mind. You know, we are God's love clothed in human form. And we are the embodied principles of divine love, wisdom, and creative intelligence. And each one of us, each soul, is a unique expression of that divine love and wisdom and active intelligence. And we're meant to be. We're meant to be absolutely unique in how those energies play through our personalities. So according to the ancient wisdom teachings, we became very lost down here. In fact, after the fall in Atlantis and the aberration of the Merkaba field, the order of Melchizedek placed a quarantine seal over the earth so that we were literally locked into the third dimension. We could no longer transcend beyond, which we could do in earlier years within the Atlantean civilization. We were able to do the L conversion, which is 45-degree angle, 45-degree angle, phase shift out, and we could go multidimensionally beyond the Earth's field and the gravitational pull of this Earth's field. So what happened was that they devised a plan to send a whole succession of divine awakened incarnations called avatars into the world. These were souls who had attained full God realization and were able to enter into the so-called holodeck, if you will, conscious, awake, and aware without losing themselves in the program. Jesus was one such, Buddha was one such, Rama, Krishna, Shirdi Sai Baba, Satya Sai Baba, Parasirama, there's a whole group of them. But many, many, many of them came, and each time they would be as a guiding light. Age to age, they would appear to guide souls to the light by reminding them of their divinity and reinforcing the awareness of their divine origin. Again and again they would come. And then they established mystery schools, not the avatars themselves, but the initiates and disciples would establish the mystery schools. And these were created all over the earth, representing various cultural approaches, different religions. There were Chaldean and Essene and Coptic and Egyptian and Jewish and Grecian. and, of course, Atlantean, all different mystery schools, and Lemuria as well had them. And all of the civilizations had them. And there were Christian ones, and on and on and on. Yet all of them were offering initiation into greater light. That's the purpose of the mystery schools, to initiate into greater light. So every soul passes through these mystery schools and initiations. Every one of us have. Or every one of us is at this time. Or we may be teaching. And we may be a student and teaching and going through initiation all at the same time. Because that's kind of the way it always is. So the inner knowing that you seem to come in with, or that you sense that you have deep within you, that you don't know where it's come from, very often comes from the training that has been received in these mystery schools in life after life. You know, that's not wasted. That higher awareness goes into your causal body, and it becomes a cloud of knowing that you can tap into. You don't lose that. So in each initiation, we integrate more light, more loving awareness into every single soul, every single cell and subatomic cell of our physical and subtle bodies. In other words, Sai Baba said that the soul actually connects into every single cell. It isn't just localized in your third eye or the center of your head or in your heart. No, it's dispersed throughout every single cell of your body. And so it's always omnipresent in every part of your being. So, for example, at the conclusion of the first initiation, the initiate has integrated one-fourth light into those cells. At the second initiation, one-half of the cells are illumined with light. At the third initiation, you are three-fourths light. And by the way, at the third initiation, the soul fully occupies the physical personality. There's a total soul infusion at the third initiation. That's often called the initiation of true holiness. At the fourth initiation, the soul, which is also called by some traditions the causal body, is 100% light. At that point, you lose the soul. In other words, the soul becomes completely absorbed into the monad or the I Am presence. It becomes retracted and dissolved into that higher level. It's absorbed entirely into the monad and becomes one with the Father. At the time of the fourth initiation of Jesus, when he said, "Into thy hands I commend my spirit," he was merging in that supreme monadic presence. He was becoming one with the Father at that point, consciously as an initiation he was undergoing. So the fourth initiation is called the Great Renunciation, because that's where you give it all over to God. Everything goes, everything. You probably would like some examples of fourth degree initiates. Well, I can give a very modern, recent one that many of us sat with and studied with and knew. Baba Muktananda was a fourth degree initiate. Helena Rorick, H.P. Blavatsky, Jiddu Krishnamurti, my memory fails me at this point, but you get the idea. These were people that had very, very difficult lifetimes, very difficult, very challenging. And it's nice to, you know, have an idea of what that looks like when it's walking as a human being on Earth. So each of these initiations were enacted by Jesus, actually, physically, and historically, as well as symbolically as the major events in his life, according to the Gospels. For example, the first initiation is represented as the birth in Bethlehem. Bethlehem actually means the house of bread. So when the Christ is born in the physical body at your birth, really, that is the house of bread. Your body is the house of bread, or Bethlehem. And that's the birth of consciousness or soul in the manger, which represents the heart, surrounded by animals. What is that? The physical body evolved from the animal kingdom and still has a lot of the characteristics of the animals. So we have to overcome that bestial nature, that animalistic nature, and reveal the Christ. The second great event represents the second initiation, which was when Jesus was baptized in the River Jordan. The River Jordan represents the river of life. When you make that commitment to be consecrated to the spiritual life in the midst of the day, in the midst of the daily events in the river of life that you encounter. So it's a conscious entrance into spiritual life. The third initiation is called the Transfiguration, and that is represented by the experience of Jesus when he transfigured his body and appeared glowing. He was absolutely glowing with divine light and beauty. And that represents, the third initiation represents the full soul integration or merge with the human personality. The fourth initiation I just described, which was depicted by Jesus at the time of his crucifixion, where the causal body or soul is offered up to the Father into the monad, and you are no longer considered a soul at that point. You are a monad, or the divine spirit, or the I Am presence from that time on. So to explain, the causal body appears like a cloud which contains all of your seeds of karma, your seeds of sprouted activity. For example, your personal conditioning, your beliefs, your thoughts, your karmic imprints, your past life memories, your experiences throughout time and space, and identifications. And when that causal body is fully illumined, it now dissolves into pure divine being, or Satchitananda, and one is no longer considered a soul, but pure Atma. This is another term for the I Am, or the monad. The next initiation is called the Resurrection. And here Jesus raised the atoms of his physical body into immortal light, which is why the Shroud of Turin is emblazoned with the tremendous atomic burst that occurred at the moment that he did that. And that's why, no matter how they test it, they cannot explain how that imprint was actually impregnated into the very fabric. It wasn't painted on. It wasn't anything that any human being did. It is his actual burial garment, according to Sai Baba. And according to Sai Baba, Jesus transfigured the physical body, not a spiritual body. He transfigured his physical body into immortal light, which every single one of us is destined to do. We don't have to go through the crucifixion like Jesus did. But our fourth initiation, our life will be very difficult. So let me tell you a secret here. According to the Tibetan master Dwal Khul and the Alice Bailey teachings, our spiritual hierarchy, the men and women who who are essentially perfected in terms of our Earth evolution, at a cosmic level are going through the fourth initiation. And that is why we have pain and suffering in the human kingdom. Believe it or not, the human kingdom has pain and suffering because those adepts are undergoing the fourth initiation. You see, we're all connected. We're all connected. The reason the earth is so emotional and emotive and does so much drama, duality drama, emotional drama, is because the earth itself is undergoing the second degree of initiation, which is the mastery of the astral body. How difficult. And the earth is the third ray planet, which is the most material of all the rays, which means basically she's a material girl with a big attitude. And so that explains, you see, there is always a, how shall I say it, there is a mirroring effect. We always are mirroring the level just above us into the physical, which is a reflective place. So everything you say here is, it looks real, but it's actually a reflection of the level just above. So when we talk about ascension, according to, again, those Alice Bailey teachings through Master DK and vice versa, we are actually not lifting that high. We're actually moving into, from the dense physical into the etheric physical earth, which is actually, we're moving into the next dimension, next higher dimension of the earth, which would be more astral, because the earth and everything is spiraling back to, on the way of return to the unified field. So in time-space, it's spiraling to its next level. That explains why we're having these appearances of all these strange animals and beasties and apparitions, and we're beginning to see discarnate spirits. More and more people are being able to see the auras around things and the orbs, and formerly paranormal, so-called invisible things are appearing now into the physical. Why? Because we are moving beyond the dense physical into the next dimension, which is astral. And astral is the plane of imagination. So there you encounter everything you've ever imagined and emoted about, felt strongly about. I think you get the picture. So back to the initiations. After the resurrection initiation, where the physical cells actually transfigure into immortal light. They put on, from mortality, they put on immortality, quoting Paul, the Apostle Paul, in Thessalonians. He said that we will put on that state suddenly. In a twinkling of an eye, we will go from mortal to immortal. And at that time, the last temporal illusion, which is death, the central dream from which all illusions spring, according to Jesus, in A Course in Miracles, that death is overcome and transcended. So at the fifth resurrection initiation, the cells are now pure living light and are perfected in terms of this earth and anything this earth could offer. Now, there's another initiation which only some of the ascended, so-called ascended masters have gone through. Not all have, according, again, to the Master DK. Not all the masters have gone through the ascension initiation. But when they have, they're called the Chohans, or the Lords of Light. A Chohan, or a Kohan, is a word that simply means the Lord of Light. And at that time, they are completely free and immortalized, and they can appear in form, without form, in and out of form, as they wish. They are free agents at that point. And to give you some context, the one seventh degree initiate that we have is the Christ himself. The Christ, who is the head of all of the masters, is a seventh degree initiate. And they don't usually give the levels for the avatars. Avatars can come in on any level, even beyond the seventh. Even beyond the seventh. So, pretty amazing when you look at the perfection of the divine plan and how we're all growing. Whether we're a master, whether we're an aspirant, we are all members of the spiritual hierarchy. We're all in that ascending Jacob's ladder of return to the divine source, the divine realms, which again is a journey without distance to a place that in highest truth we have never left. So you're seeing the extension of consciousness and its retraction and abstraction from the realms of illusion, and its re-merging in conscious awareness this time with Source. So it's called the involution, which is the descent of light into matter, and the evolution, which is the ascension or the return of that light back into pure light. So also be aware there are initiates and masters and ascended masters to be found in each one of the world cultures and religions. There is a certain point where generally you outgrow religion in the sense of being a whatever. You realize that there is one religion, and that's the religion of divine love. There's one race, the race of humanity. There's one language, the language of the heart. There is one God who is omnipresent and resident in each person. So everybody is an incarnation of God. Sai Baba said that there's not one iota of evil in all of creation, and that we must learn to see the good, holy, and divine even in the most despicable personality. To forgive means to look beyond the temporal, look beyond to the eternal. What is the eternal self of each person? The one divine spirit. So to forgive means to just look beyond. It doesn't mean to, like we think sometimes, to, you know, think you're being kind because you're giving, you know, forgiveness to someone who's done something dreadful. No, that's not the meaning of forgiveness. It's to put on blinders to that which is evil and dark and ugly, and because you know that's a shadow that will ultimately dissolve in the light. So you look for the good, the holy, and the divine in all people, in all situations, all things. And that's the secret of living in a higher vibration. That's the secret of soul transcendence. Look for the good and the divine in all people and things, and leave all the rest to God. Keep your eye single. When you keep your eye single on Jesus said in the Bible, your whole body will become filled with light. Not only that, but you'll be kept in perfect peace. Do you want to know what peace is? It's keeping your eyes single. Only God, only God, only God. I am the light of the world, but so is everyone else. No less than you. And if you would take the soul of the most horrible, despicable character in all of history and put it next to the glorious, most glorious, exalted soul in all of history, you couldn't tell them apart in the soul realm. We are all equally God, equally sons and daughters of God. Why are they always called the male Why is it always referred to as Son, as Father? Because to God, all of creation is the feminine, is the mother, is the materia, lucida. It is the receptive yoni, or the receptive principle that receives the impulse of the divine, which is always proactive, and then thence it's defined as male. But the soul is non-gender. God is non-gender. In the soul realm, there's neither male nor female. There just is the divine light that is. So know that the Christ is not limited to a religion. The Christ is an office that has been held by different beings throughout time. And it's also a universal principle. The Christ is the principle of divine love. And it's known by many, many, many terms in every spiritual culture and tradition. So what does that mean to you today? It means that you are the radiant way of return to conscious divine union. You are a disciple, an initiate upon the way, a student, a teacher in the mystery schools. You are physically transfiguring into pure light and immortality right now, right this moment. You are divine light. You are an embodiment of divine love. You are an emerging Christ, a soul aware Son of God. You are the precious harvest of the Father's self-sowing into creation. You are God's self-bestowal into creation and beyond. And you are immortal right now. And light is the only reality, because God is light. And you are indistinguishable from God. So let's just pause for a moment and close our eyes. And be aware that light, God's light, within your eyes, is the seer. God's consciousness within your mind is the knower and the listener. God's love is your true form, which is not limited to this physical cage of flesh and bone. That's just a temporary suit that you need on earth to appear on earth. But you also have ways of appearing throughout the omniverse on different planets and systems, different dimensional realities and realms. And you have bodies in which you appear at each level, woven of the love and light of the one source, the one energy, the one divine appearing as the many. You are very, very, very holy. And so every holiday or holy day can be a celebration of your reality. You don't have to lose yourself in the mindless silliness of social convention. Dare to be different. Dare to be real. You see that light appearing inside your head? You're seeing yourself as you really are. Who is it that could see? You, as the divine presence, So as we enter this truly holy season, in which we celebrate the light of the world, which is Jesus and you and me and Sai Baba, and Krishna and Rama, Buddha, and all the great lords and ladies of light that have entered our world as conscious light bringers and light bearers. We stand side by side with them all. For no one dies. No one ceases to exist. And we're all here now. And let's just surround the entire planet and take it into our heart as something so dear, so precious, as we serve as midwives, each one of us, in birthing the earth through this initiation and into her new level. That's what the energies are coming in now. They have never, ever, ever been recorded, the energies that are flowing on our planet right now. They're completely unknown. But all energy is God. There's no other source of energy. And we are right now in the holy hour of birthing into something we can't even imagine, but we know that it is of God, and it will be absolutely wondrous. So, Holy Christ Mass to each one of you as you celebrate the light that you are, that has entered this world, has the light of this world. And just bless all of creation with your holiness, with your benefaction, and with the self-bestowal of your love. That is the greatest gift that you could give, is your unconditional love. So let's go out chanting on I Hu. Deep breath. On I Hu. Blessings and grace to each one of you. Namaste.